The topic for today's Dharma talk is Don't Be a Cowherd, which takes off from two verses from the Dhammapada. And we will look through first on what these two verses are. This is from Dhammapada, verse 19. Though much he recites the sacred texts, but acts not accordingly, that heedless man is like a cowherd who counts others king. He has no share in the fruits of the holy life. The next verse is from Dhammapada, verse 20. Though little he recites the sacred texts, but acts in accordance with the teachings, forsaking lust, hatred, and ignorance, truly knowing with mind well freed, clinging to naught here and hereafter, he shares the fruits of the holy life. And now we invite Bhante to share with us a Dharma talk on this verse 19 and 20 from the Dhammapada. Bhante, please.
Don't be a cowherd. Let's understand these two verses first before we elaborate further. As the Buddha says in these two verses, Bahum piche sahitang basa mano natakkaro hoti narupamatto gopova gao ganayang paresang na bhagavasa manyasa hoti. So the first line says, Bahum piche sahitang basa mano. Even though someone were to recite a lot. Natakkaro hoti. If he does not act accordingly. And pamatto, not diligent, very lazy and indolent. Gopova gao ganayang paresang. He is like a cowherd who counts the cows that belongs to another person. Na bhagavasa manyasa hoti. He does not take part in the spiritual life, or he does not achieve spiritual perfection. So here, in this first verse, even though someone recite a lot, what does it mean? Does it mean that even though someone chant a lot, yeah, it sounds like, but the chanting and reciting should be understood in the context of 2500 years ago. Chanting and reciting were adopted by the Buddhist monks and nuns as well as other religions as a way of learning the Dhamma. So here, in the time of the Buddha, the monks and nuns recited the discourses to memorize them. So in today's context, of course, we have to take into consideration not only memorizing and reciting and chanting, but also the reading the books and accumulating the knowledge through listening to the Dhamma talks and going to the universities and achieving academic credentials related to the Dhamma. So simply, it means there can be a professor in Buddhism, or there can be somebody who have PhD degree in Buddhism. There can be someone who is well versed in theories in Buddhist teachings. However, if he does not practice, he is a cowherd. Just because someone has so much knowledge about the Buddha's teaching does not mean that he is practicing the path. Knowledge is one thing. It is essential, definitely. But knowledge alone cannot do. We need to practice. So there can be such people who are full of knowledge and they can memorize the teachings by heart. But if they do not practice, they are cowherd. There's one word here also very important. Pamatto. Pamatto here means not diligent. Buddha always encouraged appamada. Appamada means diligence. And he says, appamado amata padang. Diligence is the path to deathlessness. Pamado machuno padang. Heedfulness, heedlessness, and being indolent, being lazy, that is the path to deathless. Appamatta namiyanti, those who are diligent, they will not die, means they go beyond the death, achieve the enlightenment. Yepamatta yatamata, those who are lazy and indolent, even though they live, they are almost like dead. So this is another verse in Dhammapada. So here, what happened? Okay, here the term pamatto is very important here again. So the first verse, the Buddha very clearly says, those who have so much knowledge about Dhamma, but not practicing accordingly and not diligent, and they are like cowherds. Why did the Buddha say such a person is a cowherd? Because cowherds simply take care of the cows of others for wages. But he doesn't owe the cow. He's not the owner. In similar manner, those people who study the Dhamma, accumulate the Dhamma knowledge, and they of course keep them as a storehouse, as a library, Dhamma library. But unless they practice, they will not be benefited. Dhamma is still not theirs. They have only the theories. So, na bhagava samanya sahoti, they do not take part in the spiritual life. The second verse says, even though someone does not know much Dhamma, means as a knowledge, but were to practice and realize enlightenment, and such a person enjoy the spiritual life. As it goes, appam piche sahitang bhasamano dhammasa hoti anudhammachari ragancha dosancha pahaya mohang sammappajano suvimutta citto anupadhyano idavahurangva sa bhagava samanya sahoti. Here it says appam piche sahitang bhasamano. Suppose there is someone, he is not a professor in Buddhism, he doesn't have those academic credentials, he doesn't know a lot of suttas, but he know the essence of the teachings, he know what is to be learned, so he knows only little. So the term, though he does not recite, should be understood as theoretical understanding here, because recitation was adopted in the time of the Buddha as a method of learning. Even though the writing was available, the recitation was adopted as a way of learning, mastering, and transferring the information or the Dhamma from generation to generation. So that is why the word reciting is used here. So even though someone were to know a little bit of Dhamma, but Dhamma sahoti anu Dhamma chari, he practice according to the Dhamma. So he knows little, but he practice. Through that practice, what happened? Ragancha dosancha pahaya moha. He uproot raga. Raga, he means craving, lust, attachment, all these included into the word raga. Dosa, hatred, ill will, jealousy, anger, and many other such defilements are included in the term dosa. Moha, ignorance, not understanding, not seeing things as they are. So the ignorance hold all the defilements. All the defilements are rooted in the ignorance itself. So basically speaking, hatred, ignorance, and craving, attachment, greed. All these are held together by ignorance itself. So when you practice the Noble Eightfold Path, and eventually you will develop your five spiritual faculties, which release you from the bond of ignorance. So at the same time, all the other defilements also will be uprooted. Ragancha dosancha pahaya moha. Sammapajano, at that moment you will achieve sammapajana, means you will see clearly, you will comprehend very clearly. This is not anything that secondary, but first-hand experience. You will see things as they are. It means you are not depend on the knowledge given by third party, but direct experience. Sammapajana, you will comprehend clearly, you will see clearly. Here what you are seeing is the Four Noble Truths. So you will see the Four Noble Truths clearly, precisely, through direct knowledge. At the same time, sui mutta chitto, you are completely free from all the defilements. Your mind is completely free. There's no any defilements at all. So here it mentioned the complete liberation, the enlightenment state. So your mind will be utterly free from all the defilements. And then anupadhyano idava hurangva. Attachment is discarded. There's no clinging anymore either to this world, idava, to this world, or hurangva, to the next world. Means there's no any more attachment at all to the existence at all. So you are beyond the birth and death cycle. So bhagava samanya sauti, such a person is endowed the blessings of the spiritual life. Or in other terms, such a person enjoy the spiritual life. So here, of course, these two verses were recited by the Buddha specifically, taking two monks. One was a scholar, the other one was an enlightened one. So there is a background story to these two verses. Even though this is strictly related to the monks, but I thought that this is still relevant to any Buddhist who truly wants to follow the path of the Buddha. So based on that, we are going to have a little bit of understanding how we can not be a cowherd. So therefore the topic is don't be a cowherd. So now you know what make you a cowherd. If you know the Dhamma but do not practice it, you are definitely a cowherd. But if you know the Dhamma but practice it, you are not a cowherd. So here in the teachings of the Buddha, in order to realize the enlightenment, which is the goal of the Buddha's teaching, There are three things that go hand in hand. Pariyatti, Patipatti and Pativeda. Pariyatti here means theoretical understanding. We need to understand the Dhamma, therefore we must study the Dhamma. We have to attend the classes and courses, we have to read the books, listen to Dhamma talks, and through many other ways you can achieve the theoretical understanding. However, you do not need to be a scholar in Buddhism in order to practice it. You need to have some degree of understanding about the practice. Means basically you need to have understanding about the Four Noble Truths, Dependent Origination, Five Aggregates, Three Marks of Existence, such core teachings. So as long as you have some degree of theoretical understanding, then you know this is what you are practicing. So theoretical understanding is pariyatti. The next, patipatti, means practice. Understanding and practice must go hand in hand. If you have understanding of the Dhamma but do not practice, you are a cowherd. On the other hand, you do not have Dhamma understanding at all but you try to practice, then that is also not the right way, because you do not know whether you are practicing according to, whether you are following the true path or not. So you definitely need to have some theoretical understanding. At the same time, practice. Understanding and practice must go hand in hand in order to realize the teachings of the Buddha. Pativeda. Pativeda here means direct realization of the truth, Four Noble Truths. And that can be done by individuals. Pacchattang veditabbo vinyohi. The truth should be realized by the individuals, by wise people. So Dhamma should be realized by individuals by practicing it directly by oneself. Here, the most important message is Dhamma should be used. Dhamma is not mean to be kept in the library. Of course, library is a good place for us to go and refer. But these books must be read and understood and practiced. Dhamma shouldn't be kept inside the cupboards. It must be opened to everyone. So Dhamma must be used. Dhamma must be used to attain enlightenment, means it must be practiced. Dhamma is like a torchlight. In a dark night, with the help of a torch, we can find our way and we can find the way out of the darkness. Exactly in the same manner, we human beings, our mind is basically covered with dense darkness of ignorance. So Dhamma here is the searchlight for us to find the light of wisdom. Dhamma is like a map. If you were to go from point A to point B, and you need to study the map, how to go from point A to point B. So studying the map is like studying the Dhamma. But just because you understand the map, it does not mean you have gone from point A to B. So if you want to go from point A to B, you have to walk or you have to drive. Then only you will experience it. So in the same manner, Dhamma is to be used as a road map, and then you must walk along the path by yourself. So walking along the path, this is what it means by practice. Dhamma is like a signboards from, for example, from Lorong 29. You want to go to Changi Airport. So how are you going to go there? So there are signboards. So you must follow the signboards. Exactly in the same manner, Dhamma teach us signboards. When you practice the path, what are the signboards that you must follow? There are 8 signboards. These are in Noble Eightfold Path, 8 factors. These are signboards for you. Not simply to believe, but to be used. Follow these signboards. And Buddha has given a lot of Dhamma as form of signboards when you practice meditation. How you are progressing? What are the signboards on the path of meditation? What are the signboards of the path of serenity meditation or insight meditation? So these jhanic factors and how you experience, what you experience, all these are signboards. But then you must follow these signboards and experience it yourself. Just because you read the signboards on the map, you will not have the direct experience. So Dhamma is theoretical understanding. No doubt it is very important, but practicing it is essential. So both are important. Understanding the Dhamma as theory as well as practicing it together is essential in order to realize the ultimate goal. Dhamma is like a boat. What is the purpose of a boat? It is to cross a river or cross an ocean. So the Buddha compared Dhamma to a boat. He said, "Kullupamang wo bhikkhave dhammang desissami." Monks, I compare the Dhamma to a boat. Nissaranattaya no gahanattaya. Purpose is crossing beyond the samsaric ocean, not for the purpose of clinging to it. So don't cling to Dhamma. So at the end, even we have to let go of the attachment to Dhamma. So what is more to say about other things? So the purpose of the Dhamma practice is to cross beyond the samsaric ocean. Cross beyond the defilements. So now, how can we not be a cowherd then? The Buddha's teaching is specifically designed for those human beings who wish to be awakened. Strictly speaking, Dhamma is a message of awakening. However, the Dhamma has a broader spectrum. It has its own depth and width. Dhamma can be directly applied by 2 groups of people. One group of people, they are the ordained disciples of the Buddha, monks and nuns. This is the minority. When we take Buddhist population, perhaps monks and nuns can be counted as 1%. It's a very minority group. However, the majority of the Buddhists are lay people. So the Buddha's teaching is directly applied to these 2 groups of people. However, the Buddha designed the Dhamma such a beautiful way how these 2 groups of people can practice. At the end, both groups will realize the same Nibbana, same enlightenment, and the path Buddha proclaimed to reach is the same Noble Eightfold Path, but he very precisely explained and how it can be practiced by both groups of people, slightly different way. So for those minority groups, monks and nuns, Buddha encouraged them to confine only to 4 needs. All these 4 are physical needs. What are these 4 needs? food, clothes, medicine, and shelter. These four are enough to sustain your body. Rest of the time you dedicate to practice the Noble Eightfold Path diligently and achieve the enlightenment in this life itself. So, this is a very strict life. So, the monks and nuns, they are supposed to be confined to these four requisites and then dedicate full time in order to realize the enlightenment in this life itself. So in the time of the Buddha, as well as today, as well as in the future, there will be monks and nuns who are strictly dedicated for this. So strictly speaking, the purpose of becoming a monk and nun is to realize the enlightenment in this life itself. However, throughout thousands of years, the monk's life have changed, but nevertheless, we must remind ourselves, this is the goal. However, majority of the followers of the Buddha, enlightenment is not the immediate goal. Not many people are ready to confine only to these four and give up their wealth, glory, name, fame, and beloved sensual pleasure. They are not ready for it. Buddha knew it. So for those people, especially for lay followers of the Buddha, and Buddha designed another path. That is also the Noble Eightfold Path, but that is the graduated path, a moderate one, not so strict and not so immediate, and it can spread in many lives. For the lay followers of the Buddha, he specifically designed the practice in a such a way that lay people are supposed to achieve both aspects of the human life, material aspect and spiritual aspect. So the lay people, they are living with their wife, and husband, children and family members. They have a lot of things to do. So Buddha has given the teachings related to economic development, social integrity, relationship between husband and wife, relationship between the parents and children, and the employer and employee, and then the relationship between the governments and the subjects, how kings and ministers should rule the countries in a peaceful way, how we should achieve the economic prosperity without destroying our planet. There are a lot of beautiful teachings Buddha gave to lay people, and how we achieve both economic prosperity, which is the material aspect, at the same time spiritual success. So the lay Buddhist followers are encouraged to achieve both aspects, and they are instructed to focus and have aspirations to be born in a favorable realm after the death, because they are not ready to attain enlightenment now itself. So Buddha encouraged them to focus, to be born in a pleasurable, favorable realm, and then cultivate further and further. So when the right time comes, they can be enlightened as well. So Buddha has specifically designed this Noble Eightfold Path to be followed by both his ordained disciples and the lay disciples, but slightly different ways. But both groups are following the same Noble Eightfold Path. However, the Noble Eightfold Path can be followed in different stages. In mundane stage, of course, as long also there can be many human beings who practice the path in different stages. Every human being has different way of cultivating, and there are different level of spiritual cultivation. When these people for the first time awaken to the truth, four noble truths, that is what we call the first awakening stage, And then at that moment, they will see the Noble Eightfold Path in different perspective. Their realization is no more ordinary. So this is the supramundane aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path. And those who are awakened to the first stage and the other stages of awakening, they are practicing the Noble Eightfold Path in a different levels. So the same Noble Eightfold Path can be practiced by different individuals in different levels. We are in a different stages of development. Throughout the discourses, however, Buddha again and again prays three types of meritorious actions. They are known as punyakamma, three types of punyakamma, and specifically encourage lay people to follow. And when you look at these three types of meritorious actions, you can see them directly related to the Noble Eightfold Path. And they are designed in a such a manner to develop the spiritual faculties slowly, step by step, graduated way. So these three meritorious actions are popularly known as Dana, Sila, and Bhavana. All the three are directly related to the Noble Eightfold Path. And the lay people are encouraged to practice these three things. When you practice Dana, Sila, and Bhavana, and you are following the Noble Eightfold Path, Noble Eightfold Path eventually uproot greed, hatred, and delusion perfectly and permanently. So these three things, which is presented as meritorious actions, are helping you to get rid of these greed, hatred, and delusions in different levels. I'm not going to elaborate it because it needs more time if I were to go through it. However, there's something very, very essential. All of you are practicing Dana. All of you are observing righteous principle. All of you are practicing meditation. However, daily practice is important. What does it mean by daily practice? Of course, here it means whenever, wherever the opportunity arises, of course, you must try to practice these three things. At the same time, follow the Noble Eightfold Path with your thoughts, words, and actions, and through other, whatever the possible ways. On top of it, it is highly encouraged to dedicate at least 20-30 minutes for your spiritual practice daily. It can be in your shrine, or it can be without a shrine, but you have to make it a habit to engage in some of these activities. It can be a short chanting, it can be sitting for a meditation session, it can be a reading a sutta and reflecting about it, or it can be listening to a Dhamma talk. But what is important, dedicate 20-30 minutes for a spiritual practice. This is what we call spiritual, means to do a Dhamma act. It can be any form. However, throughout thousands of years, through experience, Buddhists have recognized it is greatly beneficial for their meditation if they can do a short chanting before that. So we encourage you to pay homage to Triple Gems and do a short chanting with mindfulness. That will make your body and mind calm. Then, of course, you can sit for a meditation session. That is also up to you. You can decide whether to practice metta meditation or whether to do a Dhamma reflection. In this class, we have selected few types of meditations which helps in our day-to-day life. These are specifically designed for the lay people who are living busy lives. So these meditation subjects can be adopted. And also, of course, we also try to spend a lot of time reading the suttas, like even these stanzas, these verses, reflecting them, thinking about them carefully and mindfully. All these are related to the daily practice. So if you can do that, I hope that we all can avoid being a cowherd. So at the same time, we can learn the Dhamma and practice. So I would like to remind you again, Pariyatti, Patipatti and Pativeda. Understanding the Dhamma, practicing the Dhamma must go hand in hand in order to Pativeda, realize the Dhamma directly. Okay, this is enough as a talk. If you have got any question, we can spend a bit of time for that.